Talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Thank you very much for listening in. Just a quick note, today would normally be a pledge drive day, but we were able to take the day off because we had over 800 pledges. And now we have just 128 pledges to go to get rid of tomorrow as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if you haven't contributed, go online to WPR.org, make a contribution, any amount, WPR.org, and we get 128 people to do that, and we'll take another day off. That's wonderful. And it's wonderful to have you here, Pete.
Always great, Larry. Hopefully I'll make it through without hacking too bad here.
Yeah, you got a
little bit of a cold.
Pete's got a nasty little cold, so he's talking through his nose a little bit.
And I'm not contagious to anyone listening.
Only to me. Don't give me that cold. Oh, I tell you what, we have so many callers online. Why don't we just go to the phones? What do you think?
Well, I got a little story to tell.
All right.
Someone sent me a hard drive that was from Windows 98. And it was a little puzzling because you'd think you could, like, plug it into, you know, another computer, set up as an external hard drive and, you know, just read off of it. And it would, the systems that I plugged this into would see the drive, would acknowledge it, but wouldn't assign it a drive letter to actually do something with it.
Huh.
So there's apparently something wrong with the drive. But I was able to recreate by putting the hard drive in another computer and getting it to become the Windows 98 second edition computer that it was. But then there was no way to get the data off of it because it wouldn't recognize a USB port. It wouldn't recognize a flash drive. The CD drive that was in the computer was not a burner. So I couldn't burn files off of it. So I'm scratching my head trying to figure out how to deal with this. What's interesting that I found along this journey of dealing with this problem was that Microsoft has now made Windows 98 a freely available operating system. In other words, they give the key out to install Windows 98. So if you don't know that, now you do. So you can just search on that. The other thing is that someone out there said there really needed to be a service pack for Windows 98 Second Edition to kind of fix the problems that still existed with Windows 98. So if you do decide to install Windows 98 Second Edition, there is an unofficial service pack for it to get it to work better. It solves some of the problems with it. And then on top of that, there are some USB drivers that you can install because not all flash drives are created equal, which I discovered at least in the eyes of Windows 98.
Mm-hmm.
So I was successfully able to install a flash drive or a thumb drive and get the data off and then put it on another computer to burn the disk so rescuing the data.
So you can be done.
So the moral of that story is what, Larry? Back up your data.
That's
the moral of the story. Back up your data. Don't rely on the fact that you can call me or send me a disk and rescue it. But try to prepare for the worst, which is they're moving parts in hard drives. They're moving parts in computers. They do fail. Just like appliances, just like cars, just like anything that we make.
Back it up. Let's go to, on that note, we're going to go to Miranda in Wausau. Miranda, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I have a question about our laptop.
Okay.
Recently, we plugged our laptop into our charger while we were using it, and after about a minute, screen goes black. I mean, the laptop is still on, and if you're over something and click it, it still opens up the new page, but the screen goes black. If it's not plugged into the charger and you're using it, everything is fine. So we want to know.
Usually the other way around.
Yeah. So when it's plugged into the charger, it appears to have some kind of connection problem with your screen where it appears like it's working, but the screen goes black.
Yes.
Just by chance, what I would recommend doing with something like that is looking at the power management settings on in the control panel. It's a Windows system, right? Windows operating system. I would go on the control panel, go under power management, and probably reset all of the power options on the laptop. And I don't know if there's a factory default, but probably turn them off.
Okay.
And see if that has any effect or relationship with, you know, you plugging in the charger. After doing that, I would reboot the restart the computer.
Okay.
The other thing is I would go to the manufacturer's website and see if there's any known issues with is this a new laptop or is it just something that started happening that you've had it for a couple of years and all of a sudden it's developed a problem?
It's an older one, and about 3 weeks ago it suddenly just started happening.
Okay. Yeah. You might, like I said, I would go to the manufacturer's website, and you might actually be able to do a search on their knowledge base to see if there's a problem similar to what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And I would also probably contact their tech support and see if they, you know, they know what might be causing something like that.
Wouldn't hurt to try those power settings, though.
Yeah, I would try the power settings just to...
First.
Yeah. Sometimes what happens is it's almost like a domino effect. Something happened, like you said, 3 weeks ago that triggered this. And whether it's a flaky piece of hardware or if it's a flaky piece of software that somehow got tripped to cause the computer to malbehave like it is, it's always frustrating when something just doesn't outright fail. When it starts acting weird, and then you have to try and figure out what the exact cause is.
So give those a try, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Ruth and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. My question this time is about backing up. Thank you for bringing this up. I have a HP Pavilion laptop. What is it, about a 2006 or so, something like that.
Okay.
And I did my initial backup, you know, and that put it on three compact discs, you know, CDs, whatever. And now it fills up. I put in like a 8 meg thumb drive, and it filled it. And so it's like, what is it backing up? Is it putting everything out there? Is it putting my email out there? Is it putting all the Microsoft Office and everything on there that I don't need on there? I only want my files backed up.
Okay.
Not the programs. I can always get the programs again.
Part
licenses, you know, and stuff.
Right. Part of it is knowing where your data files are. Okay.
Okay.
So, for example, the hard drive that I worked on, luckily for the person that sent me the drive, everything was located in their folder called My Documents, which is what Windows 98 used.
I tend to do that.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In newer systems, it's documents and settings, but it's also the user of the system. Sometimes there are multiple users, so there might be... application data.
It's me.
Okay. So one is knowing where your data files are. Another one is making sure that you're not backing up anything that's temporary, like maybe, if you've got images, if you made copies of images, you could. It's sometimes. Okay.
And you can look right at them. They're in my pictures, kind of in my documents,
okay.
and there's probably 10.
Well, one thing is to make sure that, if you're overwriting the folder versus creating another folder for a backup, so like another day.
Well, this was a brand new thumb drive, and it was 8 meg.
Right, I understand that. Okay. But there's a difference between overwriting a pre-existing folder that has your data. And let's say you create a document today, and then you create a document tomorrow. So you did a backup of today.
Oh, I always overwrite.
Okay.
Yes, I always do that.
So if you overwrite, then you're not really increasing your space allocation by much. But
right.
If you're,
that's my point, is I okay. don't have hardly anything on it.
Right. What I would do is I would have you use Windows Explorer to take a look at the thumb drive and, you know, see what's actually copied to it?
Didn't know I could.
Okay. If you use Windows Explorer, which typically, I don't know which version of Windows you're using, but, you know, if you hit the start button, it's usually found with accessories.
Okay.
It's called Windows Explorer, not Internet Explorer, but Windows Explorer to look at the files on your system. And then you can take a look at your thumb drive. It might say removable drive, but it's typically assigned, let's say, the letter E, F, or G. Okay. So you can look at that and take a look at what's actually on that drive. And if you right mouse click on the drive letter and click on properties, it'll tell you, you know, how much of the space is available and what's free.
Right.
And try to identify your data files. And then when you, what are you using for backups? What program are you using?
Just whatever automatically it comes up on my computer, back up my files now. You know, and I've turned off the automatic backup because it fills up the D drive and mm-hmm. whatnot. And and I just don't know what else to do. I haven't been able to back them up. Mm-hmm. I haven't figured out how.
So are you using, which version of Windows are you using?
Well, you know? Probably 2007 because I bought the computer. Was it to the whatever came out right around that time, 2007? I think because
probably
I thought,
Vista.
Yeah,
it is Vista. Yeah. It is totally Vista. Yes, it is Vista.
Okay,
I would use Windows Explorer. Take a look at what your data files are on that thumb drive, and see if those are the files that you. Can identify with in terms of whether or not they're your documents, your images, or, you know, what you're using your computer for, and making sure that you're not backing up stuff that is not meaningful. And, you know, how do you decide what is meaningful and what isn't? Well, if you're using Word, then your documents, you know, you should be familiar with what those documents are. If you're using a camera to take pictures, typically you're going to see .jpg files or JPEG files. So whatever programs you're working with, you need to identify the data files that you've created or manipulating and see if those are the files that are actually on that thumb drive or on a CD or a DVD. The other option is to, there are some free services out there online for backing up files. On my InfoStar Virus Info Center page, I've got a line there called Backup that's got a whole bunch of different sites that you can back up like five, I think they vary in size, but let's say 5 gigabytes of data files. You can join up with some of the photo sites, and they allow you free storage on those as well. So that's another alternative for doing backups. And then the other alternative is to use another backup program other than what's Windows. And you could go to a website like cnet.com or downloads.com and do a search and see what's been reviewed and what people think of them. And there are these backup utilities out there that you can download and then pick and choose the files that you want to back up and make sure that and then just verify that they are backed up, you know, by looking at it using Windows Explorer.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking personal computers and software with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Let's take another call here. Chris in Milwaukee is up next. Chris, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thanks. I just bought a cruise reader yesterday.
Okay.
And it's got the Android system on it. wondering, it suggested hooking up to the computer, but it's not recognizing the hardware because I have Windows Vista.
Okay. So you're probably saying, how do I get this thing to work?
How do I get this thing to sync? And, yeah.
Right. I would probably go back to the manufacturer and see what support they have for Vista.
Okay.
They may recommend, there may be a device driver that you need to download. It's funny you bring this up because there's a website I'll mention in the top 10 that has to do with Windows embedded devices, which means that all things that are not PCs, one of them being, you know, phones or, you know,
right,
anything that's not, you know, a desktop or a laptop computer is getting support for it or developing for it. So there's so many different devices out there, and trying to get things to work, sometimes the operating system doesn't recognize what's plugged into it. So you may have to, it's not tricking the operating system to thinking that something's plugged into it, but you may have to install software that triggers it to say, oh, I have this device now attached to me. This is how I deal with it. Sometimes devices have to have things installed to the operating system before they're plugged in, and sometimes they tell you to do it after it's been plugged in.
Okay. And it's my understanding this piece of equipment's only been out, like, this week.
Okay. Yeah, that could be another issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
see, I worked with a special kind of SSD, which is a solid-state hard drive that came out, was released after, like, middle of July. And I went to set it up. I got it and went to set it up in a computer the latter part of August. And I called in and said, well, I want to set this up in 64-bit version of Windows 7 Ultimate. And I'm getting these error messages. And they said, and I said, it's not, it's telling me that it's not recognizing the files because they weren't branded by Microsoft. And their, you know, response was, well, go and install the 32-bit ones. Those will probably work. It's too soon for Microsoft to have signed and approved of the files that I was looking for. So the fact that your device is, you know, out this week, you might have some challenges. And Windows 7 works well. I've, you know, using the Mac, Snow Leopard, using Windows 7, they're comparable operating systems. Microsoft did a good job finally getting their act together. Unfortunately, the Vista version of their operating system is something that I think they want to forget about. And you might be a little hard pressed to find support for it. I can't make any guarantees. I'm not Microsoft, but if you have an opportunity to update to Windows 7, you might find your system work. It'll probably work faster, and it'll probably be more stable, and you'll probably have better support for it. But
yeah.
I'm not saying to make the upgrade now. I'm saying to look and see if you can get some support from the manufacturer of your device and see what their recommendations are to get it to work with Vista.
Okay. All right. There you
go.
Good luck. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Joe and Racine, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for taking my call. Great show as always. I have two laptops, both with Windows XP, and the hard drives are about one-third empty. I think I've got issues with either the registry is too full, too much in there, and or too many programs that I want to uninstall, but I can't seem to do that. I generally don't install extra stuff, but I know that there's things that I don't need. Both laptops are running kind of slow, and I'm just wondering, gentleman device, what should I do to get the registry a bit smaller, more efficient, and to uninstall programs that I don't want.
Okay. There is a utility that I've been using with good success. It's called CCleaner. So if you do a search on C and then Cleaner, you'll find it out there. I think the company is called Puriform. I also have, when I post the top 10, I don't have it posted right now, but there are some other programs out there that do registry cleaning and getting rid of unnecessary files. But what's nice about CCleaner is the fact that you can use it for not only cleaning up your registry and cleaning up unwanted files, but also uninstalling programs versus using the control panel. So if you download and install CCleaner, if you use it to clean up the registry, you might have to run it two or three times because I've seen it where it doesn't fix all of the registry conflicts or issues in the first or second try, but usually by three. I don't think I've ever gone beyond the third try. Usually cleans it up. Okay. It'll also get rid of any temporary or unnecessary, web browser files and things like that. And then as far as uninstalling, sometimes manufacturers create their own uninstall, and you might want to check and see if any of the programs that you don't want are listed in your program listing. And when you click on it, they may give you an option for an uninstall, and you might want to try that before you actually remove it through the control panel.
Right.
Or through using CCleaner.
Sure. Okay. CCleaner, is that something that I'll have to purchase, or is that a free
program?
No,
it's actually a free download.
It's a free download.
Yep.
CCleaner.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. Thanks very much. I appreciate the help.
Yep. Good luck. And when you go to make changes to the registry, it's going to ask you a question about if you want to back it up. I usually back up the first one, and then after that, I don't back it up. So at least I have a copy of the registry prior to running the CCleaner.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it, Joe. Cynthia emailed us wondering if you've heard about this issue. The computer she has is a Dell Inspiron laptop. When typing the cursor, will suddenly jump back somewhere else, either earlier in the text or if an email, maybe back into the address or subject line. Doesn't seem to matter what program I use, Word, email, anything. We've watched as we type and go very slowly to make sure some key is not being accidentally hit to make it happen. Any suggestions as to cause before we sit on the phone for hours with Dell?
It's obviously having a problem with an input device. So the way I would probably troubleshoot that is to hook up another keyboard or mouse and see if the problem repeats itself with another input device.
Okay.
Because there's no guarantees that input devices do not have problems.
Yeah.
You know, that keyboards don't fail, that mice don't fail. In fact,
mice fail pretty often.
Yeah, and it frustrates me that they don't really offer too many wired solutions. They're all going to wireless, so the battery goes out. Could be a sign of if it was a wireless keyboard or mouse, could be a sign of a low power. You know, when low power things start acting weird, hard drives don't work when they don't get enough power and so forth. So I would look at the changing or using an alternative input device, keyboard and also the mouse, and do them one by one and see if that has an effect. The other option I would probably try is rolling back the device drivers on either one and see if that has an effect. 'Cause each hardware component has a device driver, and sometimes those, for whatever reason, develop problems or issues as well. Another thing is you could go to, I believe it's Microsoft Fix-It Center online, and try and troubleshoot it through that and see if they discover any known issues or conflicts with your system. So you could do a search on Microsoft Fix-It Center.
Jim from Cable said I once knew a computer-savvy exchange student from Norway who insisted that Linux was a far superior to Microsoft. He said it's used almost exclusively by schools in Norway, and he was surprised to see nobody using it in our schools. My question, I'm considering purchasing a new computer. What's the advantage of or disadvantage of choosing Linux operating system, and where can I search to find more information on this?
Well, there's a lot of different versions of Linux. Its roots come from Unix, which comes from the labs of AT&T. And I think I've mentioned this little story back in, I think it was like in the 1980s, I went to the Moscone Center in San Francisco, and I went to the Unix Expo. And there must have been 20 different versions of Unix and Linux. And, you know, the story still holds true today. There are different versions of Linux out there. There's one that Dell, Ubuntu, there's Red Hat and SUSE and a number of them. So there's no, common Linux that I could say, you know, this is what you should, you know, put on your system. They're all similar, but they're not all, exactly the same. So products that you get for one Linux may not necessarily work for the other. It becomes a support issue. It becomes your comfort zone. You know, who do you turn to for getting help with questions and answers? Becomes more of an online, finding the solution online. And, you know, when you go to purchase things, again, it becomes your comfort zone, buying things online and making sure they have the right support for the Linux that you're using with your system versus if you're buying stuff at local retailers and stores and so forth, or even online vendors that are selling things for Apple and Windows systems. Where's the support for the Linux? You have to do more research, more background work to make sure that what you're purchasing is going to work for the system that you have. So there is a heavier time element involved in terms of what you need to get yourself involved with for doing research and making it work, whatever it might be.
There you go. Let's go to Pat in Delafield. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a question. I have an old computer that has Windows 98 on it. Okay. I just bought a new computer that has Windows 7 on it. Can I take my old programs and get them onto my new computer? And if so, how?
So you want to take them off, or do you have the original disks?
I have original disks for some programs, but they don't work in the new computer.
Okay.
They won't recognize them. And I have programs on my old computer that I'd like to transfer to the new one.
So you're saying that they won't recognize the disks for trying to install it?
Right.
You could have some issues. You're looking at more than a 10-year gap in technology in terms of the operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be some program issues in terms of trying to get it to run even in a compatibility window, if you want to call it, to kind of isolate the program and trick it into thinking it's running under an older system. So if you have the original disks,
mm-hmm.
and you should, you know, it might warn you and say, you know, I can't run this because it's not for this system. You may have to look and see if you'd probably have to go online and go program by program and see what steps you would need to take to trick Windows 7 into thinking that you can install those programs. In other words, you're probably not alone.
Yeah.
But you would have to do some background research on the programs that you really want and say, okay, I have version 1.3 of this software, and I want, can it run on Windows 7 and see what you find?
Yep.
Okay. Well, the problem is that the people who wrote the programs are no longer in business.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's not, the answer isn't out there.
Yeah. Could be out there.
Yeah. So just because the company is out of business doesn't mean that it didn't have some followers.
No.
That were trying to do the same thing that you're doing. So I would still do the background check and see if you find some solutions out there.
There you go, Pat. Let's go to Rosie in Woodruff. Hi, Rosie. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Just two quick questions. I just got a new computer that has Windows 7 as well. And forgive me, I was talking to Mr. Packard with my information when I got on the... I could hear you telling someone previous caller about C Cleaner.
Uh-huh.
I had Easy Cleaner with my Windows XP, so I was downloaded that onto the Windows 7. And when I ran Easy Cleaner, downloaded no problem, but when I ran it for the registry, for instance, there was a kabillion things that came up, and I just got out of that. Same thing with unnecessary files. There was a jillion of them. So I'm just assuming that Easy Cleaner is not up to date for Windows 7. I didn't know if you knew anything about that. And
yeah, I haven't used Easy Cleaner in a while, and I have not. I know there was quite a period of time that there were no changes made to that.
Right, no updates.
And C Cleaner is something that's current.
Okay.
And supported for Windows 7.
So that will just take the place of Easy Cleaner.
Right.
I don't need to bother with that.
Yeah.
Anymore.
And actually, I think it goes one step further in Easy Cleaner. I don't remember if it had anything for uninstalling software, but I know C Cleaner does.
Okay.
So it has an extra feature in there.
That sounds great. And my other question was also when I get into uninstalling programs and unnecessary files and registry, I used to always set a restore point before I started fooling around with programs. And I noticed on Windows 7, when you go to System Restore, it's not like the previous version where you could set a restore point. It simply gives you the option to go back to a restore point. And I'm wondering if I'm missing something there. Is there no way to capture today? Do you have to do some kind of backup first? You can't just set a restore point yourself automatically.
Isn't that frustrating when they change things that work well?
Yes, and I really counted on that because I get myself into trouble. So that used to, always be my starting point, and I just don't want to horse around too much without doing that. I've looked all over the place, and I can't seem to figure it out.
Well, that's one of the things on my list of things to do. So
to come and back up my computer. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. I will just keep listening then.
What I would do is, it's one of those things where I wanted to know the answer to, but hadn't got around to working with it because I just kind of like saw it and it was like, oh, they changed this.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? And didn't go on to research exactly how to get it back to either the way it was or to do what I wanted to do. So
right.
What I would do is just, I would go online and do research on Windows 7 restore and backup.
Okay.
And read the answers and see what comes up in terms of you might want to add like versus XP or compared to XP.
Okay.
To try and find out what the differences are and where maybe the hidden features are.
Okay.
Because sometimes they don't make things obvious,
right.
And
yeah.
I don't know why they do that.
And that is a silly one because that did work so well. So
yeah, and there's some other things that they changed too. I don't have my list. And for example, when you try to share on a network, if you try to share the entire drive, it will not let you change permissions for folders. So if you're ever trying to share something on a network with Windows 7, share the folders and not the drives themselves. It does not. It kind of frowns on it from a security standpoint to not share an entire drive. But if you share the folders, then you can change permissions to allow read-write functionality and so forth versus earlier versions of Windows. If you wanted to share an entire drive, you could do that easily.
Right.
So There are things that they've changed in Windows 7. There was some other thing that happened to me this morning, and I'm like, why do I have to do three or four clicks to get to something that would take, like, one probably?
That's very heartening to know that you go through the same thing.
I have growing pains just like everybody else.
Boy.
But I'm sure there's a lot of Windows 7 people out there with the same little questions. So I will continue to listen to the program as always. Thank you.
All right. Yep. Thank you, Rosie.
Thanks.
John in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, John. John, are you there? Well, I guess not. Let's go to Rick in Milwaukee. Rick, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have backed up my hard drive on an older computer on a 2003 Windows operating system. Then I tried to download it onto my new hard drive, a Windows 7 operating system, and I don't see the backup, the doc, my folders that I had backed up previously on this backup drive that I've.
So you're saying that you took external hard drive, or
yeah,
is it?
I bought a Western Digital external hard drive, backed up my hard drive on my old computer because I thought it was going to fail, and sure enough, it did fail.
Right.
I had already backed up the documents, and then I had purchased a new computer with Windows 7 operating system. And when I put the hard drive in, I don't see anything relative to my older computer's hard drive.
What vintage is that older computer? What version of Windows do you know?
It'd be 2003 vintage, somewhere in that time.
So probably Windows XP.
Yes, it's an XP.
Okay.
XP now, Pro, I think.
Now, did you add that drive as an external via, like, a USB port, or did you plug it into the new computer as, like, a second hard drive?
I used it as a USB port.
Okay. And the computer, the Windows 7, recognized the drive or did not?
It recognizes the drive, but I don't see on the backup hard drive
anything
relative to the older computer.
Right.
What it did is it automatically backed up my new computer,
uh-huh,
but I can't see anything from the old XP Pro operating system or the documents that I had on.
Well, there are a couple of issues that I have. One is you said it backed up your new system.
Correct.
So did it overwrite the drive?
I don't think so. I hope not.
But
it sounds like
you're saying that whatever was there appears not to be, but at the same time you're also saying that the new system did a backup operation where it wrote to that drive.
Correct.
Sometimes there's a question of, you know, whether it's preparing it for, you know, the new system. It may have done a quick format or preparation to actually write the files to that drive, so it could write the files to that drive.
It could have erased what I had.
It's possible. Do you still have access to the old system?
I still have the old drive.
Yeah.
And the old drive was working. It was a power source issue on the motherboard or whatever. So
right.
I've got the old hard drive.
Right.
I'd have to take it out and somehow get access to it.
Well, it's probably an IDE drive, and you can get what are called external enclosures, disk enclosures. It's probably, I'm guessing, like a 5 1/4 inch IDE drive. So they make these. I know they sell them on eBay for probably like $5 to $10, including shipping. Don't hold me to that, but I know I've bought things like that. So you take the drive out and you put it in that enclosure, and that allows you to plug it into a USB port on any computer. And because it's Windows XP, it should be recognized by your Windows 7 system, and then you should be able to copy the files right off of that drive.
I'll try that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Just make sure things are unplugged and you work in your socks and touch the power supply so you release any static, so when you're working around, you know, computer electronics, you don't have, don't shock things.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your computer question as we visit with Peter Green by calling us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. And Billy asks, is there a CCleaner comparable download for Macs? And
so my response was, Larry, is there?
I haven't seen one, but that doesn't mean there isn't one.
You know, based on my experience in using the Mac and, you know, of recent vintage, the Snow Leopard operating system, I haven't seen any untidiness issues.
Yeah, there's not a need for it.
With the Mac. The way there is with Windows, you could probably do some research out there and see if there are some Mac utilities for, if you want to call it computer housekeeping. Windows seems to have these housekeeping issues with the registry. It used to be more memory management issues, but I think they've really probably done a much better job with Windows 7 than prior versions of the operating system. But that's what we'll probably guarantee, you know, for a while, that there will be utilities out there to do removal of temporary internet files and registry cleaning and, install and removal on Windows systems for some time.
Yeah. Well, I'm not seeing anything right now online. So, Joanne in Belleville, we're going to go to you. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. This is Joanne, your old Cooperative Extension colleague.
All right. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice often. I just had a suggestion for the person who emailed you about the Inspiron laptop with the cursor was moving all over the screen.
Yeah.
I've had three laptops, two Inspiron, one Latitude. I had the same problem with each one. And the solution ended up being resetting the touchpad, that they come set with the lightest touch possible, usually. And what I was told, and it ended up being the case, is that you don't know how easy it is to graze that touchpad as you're typing. And that sends the cursor someplace. So I went and reprogrammed it to be a heavier touch. Now, the caveat on that was, in all three of those laptops, that software needed to reprogram the touchpad never came loaded onto the computer.
Oh, jeez.
But Microsoft or Dell, who I guess I called Dell, was able to load it online down to me. And
right.
I programmed it for a heavier touch, and the problem went away.
All right.
That might not be this person's problem, but it might be.
Yeah.
It's worth a try.
I know Dell is really good about listing the programs and device drivers for the model of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a search on Dell's website, they usually give you a very detailed list of what they make available for the system. So person should be able to locate what they need.
And it could be that the program was included on that person's laptop. If it is, go to the control panel and just do that.
Yeah.
In my case, it wasn't there. So
it's interesting how it all of a sudden develops the problem versus it could be just a simple wear issue. You know, over time things get worn and...
Yeah.
I mean, touchpads, it's not like there's a guarantee that they'll never wear.
Sure.
Touchpads.
In my situation, this is a problem from the day I took it out of the box.
Wow.
Oh.
It just came set with the lightest touch possible. And you can go all the way up to the heaviest touch possible, which is possibly what I did. And once I've done that each time, the problem went away.
Joanne, thank
good.
You.
Good to know.
I don't know if it may not be the right solution, but it might be another solution anyway.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Somebody said cocktail or Onyx as a substitute for sea cleaner, and I don't know of either of those, but for a Mac.
Yep.
We can look into that. Don in Portage, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi there. See, my situation is I have a Windows 2000 system, and I've lost my ability of my computer to connect to the printer. And so after trying a number of things, I finally took the programming off of the 6200 and tried to reload it. And I've tried to do that a few times now, and now even when I put the disk in, nothing happens. It's just nothing.
Hmm. So what kind of printer is it?
Lexmark 6200.
Okay. So it is something that was working and then all of a sudden started to malfunction.
Right.
It wasn't communicating.
Just said it couldn't find the printer anymore.
Yeah.
I tried the cord, and the printer lights up and works all by itself. But.
Right. So have you tried to actually remove it from the operating system?
Yes, I did. I took the programming off. And when I try to reload it now, when I first tried to do that, I would get something up and it wanted this and it wanted that, and I couldn't figure out what that was. But now when I try to reload it, nothing happens. The disk just it whirls away, and then but nothing happens.
Okay. A couple of things that I would try. One is trying to get that printer to see if it works on another system, which may or may not be an option. But, you know, is it the printer that actually is having the problem, or is it the computer side that's having the problem? The other one is trying to do some housekeeping on the computer to make sure it's cleaned up. It might have some registry conflicts, so maybe doing a registry cleaner on...
Yeah, I'm familiar with the famous C Cleaner.
Yeah, C Cleaner, and there's some others out there. You just want to make sure it's, you know, your operating specific. You mentioned Windows 2000. But, you know, cleaning the registry so that, you know, you've got stuff uninstalled, and then by cleaning the registry, it gets rid of orphan referrals or links to things that are no longer on the computer. And then rebooting the computer and then trying to run through the install again and see if that works.
Okay.
One other thing is maybe going to the manufacturer's website and seeing if they're, you know, you have the latest version of the software to reinstall it with. That might be worth a try, too.
Okay.
It's hard to say why these things develop problems, but, you know, they're moving parts, and there are connectivity issues, and, you know, it doesn't take much for something to be off and things don't work. You know, the whole computer digital industry is based on and off switches, zeros and ones, and if a zero becomes a one by mistake, then things don't work.
Things don't work. And grab a pencil or a pen for those who are interested in creating a new system restore point on Windows 7. Steve, our engineer, says you click on My Computer, then you click on System Properties. So My Computer, System Properties, then System Protection. And that brings up a dialog box. And the bottom button is Create. So it's click on My Computer, System Properties, System Protection. You'll get a dialog box, and the bottom button in the dialog box is Create.
So someone at Microsoft.
Actually, that wasn't one of our guys. It was an emailer somebody who listened and emailed in.
So someone at Microsoft got a huge bonus for creating something that should never have been created. Why did they do something like that?
Is
beyond me. Why not put it in the obvious place where it needs to be so that it's intuitive to the users of their prior versions of the operating system. Why go through the pain of changing and hiding an important function?
And that involves...
That should be outlawed, Larry. It should be outlawed. And that person or team of people that created that new way of doing things should be unemployed. That's
well,
how I feel about
it.
Stuff
involves
like
five
that.
Clicks. It involves five clicks. So my computer, system properties, system protection, get the dialog box. And the bottom button is create. Click that for a final click and you're done. There you go.
Peter, I shake my head at that
stuff. Oh man. Peter Greed of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin. Looking at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Pete, this time of the program, you always have a top 10 list for us. And what do you have today?
Okay. Now, the first thing is they're not posted yet, so you'll have to pay close attention until I do post them, probably later today, tonight, or
okay.
Maybe tomorrow.
Okay.
So this first one is called Windows for Devices. It's published by eWeek, and it covers news and information about Windows-embedded operating systems such as navigation devices, smartphones, point-of-sale terminals, and more. And it's geared towards developers, but for those that are curious about all the embedded devices out there, what's covered, this is a great site for it. This next one is actually a program I started using, and you got to love this name, Larry, SeaMonkey.
SeaMonkey.
SeaMonkey-project.org is a community effort to develop the SeaMonkey all-in-one internet application suite that includes an internet browser, email, newsgroup client with an included web feed reader, HTML editor, chat and web development tools, and it originates from Netscape and Mozilla. So been using Outlook Express for a long time with mail. It deals with email. If you edit web pages, it's got a web editor and so forth. So there's a lot of neat features. It's an all-in-one.
Cool.
This next one is called Extra Normal, and it's spelled xtranormal.com, and it's a website that allows you to create your movies online from text to movies and share them with friends. It's got claims to have nearly 10 million projects created. The next one is called Manta, MANTA.com, and they claim you can search and browse 63 million companies in the U.S. and worldwide by business category. The next one is called NoDevice, NoDevice.com, and it's a massive collection of device drivers from all major manufacturers for help with hardware installation for a wide variety of accessories and add-ons to your computer. And if you can't find it, you should let them know, and they'll try to track it down for you. Internet Explorer has been released to beta, and there is a website created called Beauty of the Web, which allows you to see how developers and designers are creating new websites using the endorsed HTML5 and advancements in Internet Explorer 9. This website was recently in the news, and it's called, I believe it's pronounced Groupon, which is Groupon.com. It was launched in 2008. And it features daily deals on the best stuff to do, see, eat, and buy in a variety of cities across the U.S., Canada, and Europe. The next one is called MindNode.com, and they claim to have a simple-to-use mind mapping application for the Apple Macintosh operating system to help you visually collect, classify, and structure ideas, and then organize, study, and solve problems. So things such as to-do lists, brainstorming, holiday planning, research, writing. This might be something for your classroom, Larry.
Yeah.
Next one is called wisecleaner.com, which is a highly rated free, and they also have some purchase versions of utility software for Windows operating system. It includes a registry cleaner. The difference between something like this Wise Cleaner utility and CCleaner is that CCleaner includes the registry cleaner and some other utilities. But the Wise Cleaner works. I've tried it, and it works. And this last one is a tech news portal that covers a wide variety of areas, including that include technology. It's called thetechjournal.com. And what's interesting is, did you know that there is a company working on a cell phone charger using both nanotechnology and the kinetic energy created from walking using your shoes?
Ah.
So that kind of news is
cool.
To be found at that website. Yeah, that is pretty neat.
So there you have it.
So I'll have those posted probably within the next day at infostar.com.
Sounds good. Let's go to Sue in Appleton. Sue, hello.
Hi. I have purchased a new computer, and I'm kind of calling to verify what I think I've learned by listening to your show in the past, is instead of biting on all of the bombarding security stuff I get from McAfee and other ones like that, am I okay just to use the Adware and the Avast and like a registry cleaner that I can download free off the internet?
I would tell you to do a search and download Microsoft Security Essentials. You're using Windows 7?
Yes.
Yeah, I would do a search and download. It's going to come up. If you use Google or even Bing, it'll probably come at the first and their second links. It's Microsoft Security Essentials. It's made and released by Microsoft, and it's to deal with spyware, adware, malware, and virus protection for your computer. And once you install it, then do the update, and it'll put what looks like a folder in your system tray to the lower right, and when it's protected, it's green. When it's got issues, it's red or orange.
Okay.
So just pay attention to the color differences. And it takes the place of MS Defender that they had for earlier versions of, like, XP and earlier versions of Vista.
And that's free.
And it's free.
Okay. And it's free. So there's really no reason to buy the McAfee and other things like that. Is that right?
No. That's kind of the change that's going on right now, and you'll probably see some pretty good, reduced prices on antivirus programs because of, Microsoft giving this program for free.
All right.
Okay. And I have one other question, if I could, quick. It's regarding the old computer. I want to be able to use that basically as a non-internet-based word processor, or potentially pass it on to my in-laws who use the computer very little. They would add the wireless adapter and have it the internet. But can I use the disks? That's a Dell, also probably about 03. It's the XP. Can I restore that to basically factory settings to kind of start over with that computer?
Sure. Usually the disks that came with your the CD or DVDs that came with the computer, there's sometimes they put the instructions on the disks themselves, or you could probably do a search on Dell's website or just do a general search, and you'd probably find the instructions on how to exactly do that. Most of the time, it's putting the disk in, and then it just prompts you through, the following operation is going to restore it to factory settings and wipe your drive clean, so we're warning you to make sure that you know what you're doing.
Right.
If you continue, you're going to lose all data and things like that.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Susie, Springfield, Illinois. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Western Digital small hard drive literally piggybacked with Velcro on my laptop. I use it just for my iTunes files because I have a lot of audiobooks and the like. I've got iTunes set so that it only uses that hard drive for iTunes files, or it points to that hard drive.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there's some thing somewhere that I can't find that is double copying all of those audio files to Windows Media Player. I've tried to, I can't really get rid of Windows Media Player because I need it occasionally, but because QuickTime doesn't run everything, and I'm running PC, I don't have an upgrade to 7 yet. Well, I've got the disks, I just haven't done it. procrastination. So what can I do, if anything that you know of, to stop this double copying?
Interesting. So Windows Media Player is somehow...
hijacking.
Yeah.
Not a surprise, I guess, but...
Yeah. I would probably... I would probably do a search online to see how to... something like how to stop double copies, Windows Media Player, and iTunes.
Yeah, I haven't found anything when I've done searches.
Did you try doing that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I haven't found anything like that, so I thought that I'd come to the expert.
Okay. why don't you, if you send me an email with that in the subject line, you know, double copying with iTunes and Windows Media Player, and I'll see what I can come up with.
Okay, and I'll give you all the parameters.
Yeah, and if you send it to web1@infostar.com,
okay,
I should get it.
All right.
And I'll see if I can find something for you. Sometimes it's a matter of how to ask the questions and reading the answers or just to get a little bit better at it.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Deborah in Madison, your turn. Hi, Deborah.
Yes. I'm calling. My email was contact list was hijacked. I started getting messages back from friends of mine saying they were being enticed to buy all sorts of strange things. And I'm wondering, what do I do to make that safe? I have a PC. I also have an iMac that I don't even want to open until I get this figured out. This is happening on the PC, on my Google Gmail, or it either happened on Gmail or Hotmail, and I can't identify which of the accounts got hijacked. I don't know how to tell that one. And I'm worried about everything from not spreading this around to friends, and can I use this contact list? Do I have to close out that email account and open a new one? Can I still sync my iPhone? So I just need some help.
Okay, so couple words of advice, and I think I mentioned my daughter had her Gmail account hijacked and had some financial issues going on, is make sure, because Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, those kind of email accounts are accounts that the information stays up on the web because it's web-based versus email that's downloaded to your PC with like on a Mac, Pegasus would be an email or client that you're downloading those messages to your PC, Outlook or Outlook Express. Those are coming from the web server or internet server to your PC, and typically they're deleted. Versus those online accounts, the information stays there. So if you're dealing with financial information, personal information that you don't really want to be seen by others, you really need to be careful about what you're leaving up there, because if those accounts get compromised, then someone else is going to have access to that information. So I usually recommend not keeping things there.
So where do you keep them?
I download all my important stuff, gets downloaded to a PC. I do not leave it accessible online, and using, you know, Microsoft Security Essentials on a Windows system, you know, is acting as an antiviral, you know, against worms, trojans, and viruses on your PC. Something happened that compromised your Gmail account, or is it your Hotmail account? You're saying it sounds like you have contacts in both.
Right, they share contact lists.
Right.
So this has got me concerned.
So what I would do is I would actually...
In my iPhone, which I think.
Yeah, so I would close... I would get the contacts that you have in a list, whether or not you use Notebook or whatever, and save that list of contacts, and then I would close those accounts.
Bummer.
And open up another Gmail account, because, you know, somehow there you might be in a position that there might be some other things going on that you don't even know.
Okay.
So, and then the other thing is I tell people to set up a separate Gmail or Hotmail, whatever you want, that's just for your smartphone, and it's just for you. In other words, if you have an important message that you want to get and take with you on your phone, on your smartphone, that it's an email account that's just for your phone, just for you, and you forward yourself those messages, and then they're accessible by you on your smartphone, and you always have access to that. So, and you don't give that out to anybody else. That way, it's never shared, no one else uses it, no reason to, and it's just coming to your phone. What else can you do?
I changed my security settings to only accepting from known senders, except I'm still getting email from people I haven't contacted, so I don't understand that one. I thought I changed it. You know, I went into security as soon as I got that message. So I need to completely abandon that email address.
Yeah, you're going to, because that the contacts got hijacked and it's probably being used along with other things. It's probably was sold or given away. So you're just going to keep getting bombarded by things that you don't want.
Okay.
All right.
And then I send out a notice to everyone on the list that I've changed. And
yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something to keep you busy.
Yeah. So is this all contained? So you were saying something about Pegasus or something, or Microsoft Explorer thing?
Yeah,
or?
there are programs like Pegasus is an email client for the Mac.
Okay.
Outlook on Windows is an email client or program for the PC that's popular. Outlook Express on the earlier versions of Windows is popular. Windows Live Mail is now another program that took the place of Outlook Express. So there are programs that allow you to download email from the web to your PC and delete the messages that are left up on the web.
Okay.
So you can do that with Gmail. If you have some of those programs, you can actually make it so that you have a Gmail account, but it has a plugin or interacts with your computer to actually, when you download those messages from Gmail, it deletes them automatically.
It goes to that specific physical computer.
Right. Yep.
So it wouldn't go to the other laptop in the house. It would just go to one, whatever
correct.
Laptop I was at.
That is correct. Yep.
Okay.
The language for that is like a POP3 email account.
Okay. Yeah, POP3. Like, I'm totally point and drool. So POP3.
POP email account.
POP email account.
I don't even remember what the acronym stands for, and I don't want to.
So I open Windows Live Mail, and I look for that choice to open a POP email.
In the setup or maintenance, there are features to do that.
Okay.
It may not be so obvious unless you know what you're looking for. So you need to know that terminology.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks and good luck. Appreciate the call, Deb. David in Madison. Hello.
Hi there. My question is regards to, I have Windows Vista, and about 2 months ago, I went into my documents. I was going to create a new folder, and I don't know if I inadvertently switched some sort of setting before this, but every time I try and create a new folder in my documents, it reverts back to the word new folder. It defaults right back to that. I can't put a name in there. I tried to even rename existing folders, and it still comes back with the original name. It won't let me change anything. I thought maybe I might have had too many folders, so I deleted a couple folders, and that doesn't work either. It still comes back. When I try and create something in my documents, it just says new folder. And I can only create one because it won't have, like, new folder one, new folder two. It'll just say new folder, and if I try and create another one, it'll say, do you want me to overwrite this and delete all the files? So have you ever heard anything like that before with Windows Vista?
No, that definitely sounds on the weird side of things. So if you right-mouse click on that folder and try to rename it, it won't let you do anything?
Nope, it'll just come back to new folder. It'll let me type in the letters, like bills, let's say. And then when I hit enter, it'll revert back to the word new folder.
Yeah. It sounds like it's having a problem with permissions. You know, you could either continue to play with Windows Explorer and Vista and look at folder options and see if something inadvertently got changed with permissions and what they're allowing you to do or preventing you to do. Or you might want to go online and just search for folder permission options in Vista and to like reset to default and see if you can find something with that. Because typically you should be able to, but there might be something to do with your user settings that is preventing your interaction with the operating system to name the folders.
Okay.
And that's usually because of restrictions and something happened where your user, which used to be able to do everything, now sounds like it's got restrictions on it.
Well, I did set up a second account for my stepdaughters when school started.
Uh-huh.
And I set like the time limits on their folder and
right.
put a password on my side so they uh-huh. could get into, and so I wonder if I inadvertently clicked something off.
Yeah, that might be where it happened.
Because it was about 2 months ago, and that's about the time I think when I went in there and I created a second account on my Vistas for
yeah.
the girls. So.
And it also could be a bug in Vista where what you did and what you thought you were doing didn't actually do what it was supposed to.
Yeah.
I would bet, possibly put some money down on that bet.
Yep. Well, thank you very much. I'll look into that then.
Yep.
All right.
And, a service pack, if it's available, might have fixed a bug like that. So... Vista is something I would make sure I would keep up to date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pete, here we are, out of time.
Always runs quick.
Yeah, it always runs really, really fast.
You know, if I was if I had a helpline right now, I'd probably lose my voice by the end of the day.
Well, you're gonna have to take care of that cold.
Yeah, it's the worst I ever had was when I was an undergraduate. I had 11 days of laryngitis.
No. Oh.
And I played goalie in ice hockey, so you can imagine how frustrating that was because I was very vocal.
Well, you are going to be back in almost exactly a month. You're going to be back on November 1st. And in the meantime, I think you were going to do a little search for somebody who's going to email you.
Yep.
I expect to usually get a couple of emails after the show.
Always do.
All right. Pete, thank you so much.
Always great.
Yeah, for being with us today. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Oh, man, this was supposed to be a pledge drive day. We took it off because we had 800 donations. Now we're within 120 or so of getting another day off. And we're sure hoping to do that. Call in with a pledge now at WPR.org, and we can take another day off our pledge drive. Thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.